This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello and welcome to The Hand Cell, where interesting people tell us about books that they think we should read. I'm Jen Northington, coming to you from Book Riot, and today's guest is Erin Sterling, also known as Rachel Hawkins. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So you are, as Rachel Hawkins, the author of many, many YA books, including bestsellers. Yes. Our readers might know Hex Hall, Rebel Bell, for example. And the series that you are here to tell us about, the X-Hex series, is your first foray into adult romance. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes, my very, very first romance, which is kind of crazy when I think about it.
It is kind of crazy.
Like, I've been such a romance fan for so long. I can't believe it took me like 40 years of my life to become a romance novelist. But what can you do?
Well, I was going to say, listen, you got there. So that's all that matters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm here now. That's all that matters.
That's right. That's right. So the X-Hex came out last year. And by the time that this airs, we're recording it a little advance, the sequel, The Kiss Curse, will be on shelves, which is, I'm very excited for, you know, the Gwen Wells story. So,
yes,
you know, it's
yes.
going to be
any shenanigans.
Yeah, shenanigans. I love it. I love it. But so that's you as a writer. Tell us a little bit about yourself as a reader.
So, yeah, I think like a lot of writers, I'm a very voracious reader, always have been. And I am definitely one of those people that I will read just about anything. I certainly have like genres that I'm drawn to the most, but like my friends always joke that if like you go in a bookstore with me, like it's going to take a while because I have to look at everything. It's like, we're going to look at romance. We're going to look at mystery. We're going to look at the science books. There might be like a really cool nonfiction book about hurricanes that I want to read or something like that. So yeah, I'm a massive, massive reader. And again, I like a little bit of everything, you know?
Yeah. Were you one of the kids who was like reading the cereal boxes if there was nothing else around? Like,
oh, completely. Yeah. Like one of those people that would like never without a book, like, yeah. The, you know, rise of e-readers was like so big for me because it just meant that I had like now hundreds of books with me at all time. Because, you know, like when you would pack for vacations,
yes.
like, and you'd get so stressed, like, okay, I need to bring X amount because like, what if I don't enjoy reading this? Or what if I'm not in the mood for that?
Uh-huh.
I'm still going to buy books in the hotel gift shop probably. I'll read anything, anytime, anywhere, basically.
100%, 100%. It's very relatable. Yeah, I bring both ebooks and physical books on vacation with me.
Same, same. It's very important though. Like I will spend, my husband makes fun of me. We travel a good deal and he's like one of those guys that's like extremely prepared for every trip.
Mm.
And so he's always thinking about like what kind of like clothes he needs, which is very important, obviously.
Sure.
And meanwhile, I'm like still, you know, taking books out of the suitcase, putting new books in the suitcase, like trying to find the, and again, I will always buy books on vacation.
Yes.
So it's a problem.
It is. It's a problem. It's a lifestyle. You know,
it's
exactly. I think a lot of our listeners will relate. Well, we're going to talk about some books that you probably would vote for bringing on vacation in just a second. But before we do that, let's take a sponsor break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour. HeroQuest is a graphic novel that is the story of a genetically augmented metahuman named Hero who travels into the multiverse 400 years into the future to save Earth from a disaster it cannot avoid. It has everything from mutants to robots to zombies to aliens, witches, and more. It's a quest for 10 rings of tremendous power from 10 different worlds that will be needed to save our world from certain disaster. It's an epic journey that will require the hero named Hiro to be cursed to save the lives of billions on Earth. It's a story of heroism, wonder, betrayal, and finally, revelation. This is the hero's journey. This is Hiro's quest. So the story was imagined by the mind of Steve Aoki and written by New York Times bestselling author Jim Kruger and Steve Aoki. So make sure to check it out. And this episode comes thanks again to Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com. And catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Publishing. So I got a story with a little Old West debauchery, if you want to get a little messy. So there is a city steeped in the Old West mess. And in the city, a reporter is following every lead to a dangerous place, one that could bring him glory and fame or end his life. New York Times bestselling author Robert Dugoni is back with a gripping new thriller of corruption, vice, and murder set in Depression-era Seattle. It's about a reporter covering a hot murder trial who soon learns nothing is what it seems. The story could make his career if he lives to write about it. You can learn more at amazon.com/A Killing on the Hill. So yes, A Killing on the Hill by Robert Dugoni is what you need to pick up if you are into some Depression era danger in Seattle. It's a city of big dreams and dark ambitions, and this reporter gets caught up in the muck. So make sure to check it out, and thanks again to Amazon Publishing for sponsoring this episode.
So, you know, looking at the picks that you've got here and then hearing that you read very widely, like, that makes sense to me. These picks are, you know, a range.
Wide-ranging, yes.
Yes, but except for they're all very spooky. We were talking before I hit record about, you know, leaning into spooky season, which it is still too hot where I am, but I can't wait for sweater weather.
Me too. And here, like, I'm in Alabama, so... We will not get like actual sweater weather until November. Like our fall is very much like, it's still very autumnal in like early December here.
Wow.
So it's like, we have hot Halloweens a lot of the time. It's really depressing. So I'm absolutely like, I bought Halloween decor online today. I've been burning my pumpkin candles. And then yes, all of my books are like spooky season books, because that's where my head is right now.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, I mean, I love it. So let's dive into them then. The first book we have here is one that has been hugely buzzy, at least in my circles. And I haven't gotten to it yet. So I'm excited that you picked it. And I can't wait to hear you talk about it. It's The Hacienda by Isabel Cañas.
Yes. So this is like one of those books too, where as soon as I don't even know if I saw the cover. I might have just like seen the Twitter pitch of like, hey, this book is coming out. And I shamelessly like got on Twitter and was like, someone please send me this book right now. And they were nice enough to send it very quickly. And I was able to blurb it, which I was really happy to do because it is so good. So the Hacienda takes place in Mexico in the mid-1800s. It's right after the Mexican Wars of Independence, which was a period of history that I didn't know anything about. And I'm a big, big historical fiction lover as well. And this book was just like the perfect mix of like really good, juicy historical fiction with a scare you half to death ghost story. So, and I love when authors can do that. And I think Isabel does that so well, that kind of blending of genres, that it's really seamless. And it's about a young woman who marries a wealthy man and moves with him to his creepy house, the titular hacienda, as it were. And of course he has like a formerly, you know, a former dead wife. He's got like creepy relatives. Like it's the whole gothic thing, like all of the kind of tropes that we expect. And it's, again, a genuinely terrifying haunted house story. And this is not one of those things where it's like, oh, perhaps the ghost was inside them the whole time,
right.
You know, or like she's going crazy or whatever. It's like, no, this is like a full-on ghost story with a very scary, very angry ghost. There's also a super hot priest. I'm always a big fan of someone who grew up reading The Thorn Birds of when a hot priest shows up. So
amazing.
And he's a hot priest who also like secretly does witchcraft. So like, I mean, come on.
Yeah, sold, right?
Like
sold.
Boom. But yeah, like I said, it is just, it has like, there are scenes in that book that like I still think about just because she does such an excellent job of that really like growing sense of dread that I think is such a fundamental part of like a really good Gothic.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it was just really exciting to see somebody taking a genre that I love and am super familiar with and doing something that felt like traditional in so many ways, but also like really new and like nothing I'd quite read before. So yes, love the Hacienda, highly recommend. I think like it's on the cover of the book, me just being like, this is the best book ever.
It's good to be an author who can get books and then blurb them, right?
Exactly, exactly. So I do appreciate that aspect of my job.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, this just occurred to me as you're talking, because, you know, I think that we're seeing, I don't know if I want to call it a Gothic revival necessarily, but there's mm-hmm. so many authors in recent years taking these, like, you know, very beloved, but also a little bit time-worn Gothic tropes and making them their own. And, you know, I think it's really cool.
It's super cool. And again, as somebody that can't get enough of Gothic, I am such a huge fan of it. I also loved Mexican Gothic.
Yes.
And obviously the Hacienda got kind of compared to that, but they're like wildly different books. They just both take place in Mexico and have scary houses.
Right, right.
But I loved Mexican Gothic so much. And that was another one where I was like, oh, wow, like you've got so many of these things that I recognize, but whoa, are you doing something like really new and interesting with it in a way that I haven't seen before.
Yeah. No, I mean, Silvia Moreno-Garcia, her output is astonishing.
She writes, you know, really different things.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
she jumps genres all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all bangers.
Like, yes, it's true.
I have absolutely loved. So yeah, she can do no wrong.
Yeah, I think that's to your point about, you know, how they get compared. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I think is also very cool about, you know, getting all of these new voices in publishing, because we get stories that, you know, are not the same, even though perhaps, you know, marketing dollars want us to group them side by side, but we get different viewpoints on similar stories, similar places, but that they just go in different directions. And that's so cool and exciting as a reader, I think.
It really, really is. I think that, like, you know, publishing still has miles to go on a lot of things. But I do think that right now, like, we are seeing like such an influx of, you know, just different stories, like the story that's not the same thing over and over again. And I really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, very same, very same. Well, your next one too is new to me. So, I think it's going to be a similar case here. It's When the Reckoning Comes by LaTanya McQueen. Tell us about this.
Oh man, this one, it is like a fairly short book. It's fairly like slight in size and it packs a massive punch. It's, again, it was just like one of those things where I was kind of like, oh, this is, a sort of familiar thing of like, a haunted place, a place where violence has happened in the past and now, you know, is coming back in a supernatural way, but in a setting that I'd never seen before and with a sort of viewpoint I had not seen before. So When the Reckoning Comes, which is like, forget it, like that's the best title.
It's a good title.
It's so good. Is about this young woman, Mira, who is returning to her small southern hometown because a childhood friend of hers is getting married at the site of a former plantation. And I was immediately kind of drawn to that because, like, as someone who, you know, is from and lives in the South, like, I've always found, like, the whole concept of plantation weddings just completely abhorrent.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't get married there, obviously.
Right.
And so this is like, you know, these people decide to have a wedding at a place that has this incredibly dark history. And, you know, that history is not always that far in the past, as it were. And so it's a ghost story in that way. It's a haunted house kind of story, but with these much deeper, more resonant themes. And again, is really sort of looking at the history of racism and violence in America while telling that through like a genuinely very scary horror novel. And I just thought it was like, again, just so smart, such an interesting take on it. And just, yeah, like nothing I'd ever really seen before. And so when everyone looks it up too, it has like the creepiest cover as well. It's like literally in front of me right now, and I'm looking at it again, and I'm like, oh gosh, oh, this book was so scary. And again, just really, really well done. So if you're looking for something like with, you know, your scares with like a little bit of extra depth and food for thought, then When the Reckoning Comes, I highly, highly recommend.
That sounds great. I love that
Again.
premise. I'm like, yeah, it's very obviously very timely still, sadly.
Exactly.
But yeah. So, okay. So I'm putting you on the spot here. So forgive me. But like, if you had like a ghost scale, like 1 to 5 ghosts, and like five is
Right.
the scariest thing you've ever read, and one is like
Yes.
you would, you know, tell a 5-year-old about it. Like,
Right.
where is When the Reckoning Comes on your ghost scale?
You know, I would give it like a 3, because it's like, to me, it's like right in the middle. It's very like,
Okay.
there's a lot of like horrifying stuff in it, but a lot of the horrifying stuff doesn't really come from like by the time, like, it's one of those two where you're very much like team ghost, you
Yes. Oh,
know,
okay. I like
really.
that.
You're like, mess them up, ghost. Well, you know. So yeah, no, this one's like a solid 3, I think, for
Okay.
me.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And where would you put the Hacienda now that we're doing this ghost
Hacienda's
scale?
like, yeah, Hacienda's probably like a 4.
All right. All right.
Because it does have some really, like, it has to be really hardcore for me to like probably give it a 5 in
Right.
terms of, because I read a lot of horror, so I'm sort of like, it has to be, you know, way on up there in terms of scares. But yeah, no, they're both pretty scary, but like in different ways.
Okay. All right. I like this scale though. This is helpful
Yes,
for me because
it's a good scale, yes.
it's going to be useful. And I guess your books, it's interesting actually. Now I'm trying to think of like where would I put your books, especially, you know, the XHEX series, which like
Yes.
romance, you know
Oh,
you're going to
they're.
get a happy ending, but you do have some creepy stuff in there.
I do. I cannot resist like the creepiness. Like,
Yeah.
you know, I've kind of had to like scale some of it
Oh,
back.
really?
Yeah, like because you are, you know, I want the XX books especially are like supposed to be kind of cozy.
Right.
And so I want like some spooky stuff, and there's definitely spooky stuff in there, but I also don't want it to go too hard.
Fair enough. Well, that's a good segue for us. So we're going to talk about The Kiss Curse, which is book 2 in the X-Hex series, in just a second. First, we're going to take a sponsor break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on the Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by K.T. Hoffman. The pressure cooker of minor league baseball leads to major chemistry in this exhilarating, sexy, and triumphant rivals to lovers debut romance. Gene Ionescu is the first openly trans player in professional baseball. He has nearly everything he's ever let himself dream of. That is, until Luis Estrada, Gene's former teammate and current rival, gets traded to the Beavers. Now, Gene and Louise can't manage a civil conversation off the field or a competent play on it, but in the close confines of dugout benches and roadie buses, they begrudgingly rediscover a comfortable rhythm. As the two grow closer, the tension between them turns electric and their chemistry spills past the confines of the stadium. So, this is one of the first adult rom-coms published by a major publishing house centering a gay trans man by a gay trans man. It also has ADHD and anxiety representation and some joyful, heartfelt moments. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to The Dial Press, publishers of The Prospects by KT Hoffman, for sponsoring this episode.
All right, so what is your elevator pitch for this series?
So elevator pitch is rival witches in a small town open up competing witch shops and must deal with a threat to the town from outside and also their own very inconvenient attraction to one another.
Yeah, Gwynne and Wells, I love, you know, this is like a thing in romance, right, is that you get the supporting characters in one book become the main characters in the next book. And I confess that when I first met Wells in the XX, I was like, oh, I'm looking forward to that one. That
yeah.
Book right there. And Gwynne is amazing, obviously, like yes, a very yes. fun character.
Yeah, it was. I love, you know, like I said, I am a long, long time romance reader. I've been reading romance novels since I was, you know, probably about 11 or 12. And so I have always loved like the sequel bait.
Yes.
There is something really satisfying in like long running romance series about how, you know, each book really stands on its own. But like, mm-hmm. man, like when you get to that book that's about those people that you've sort of been seeing in the background. Like there is nothing better than sort of like realizing your people are getting their book.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was, I definitely knew that I was going to write about Wells eventually. I always knew that the second book was Gwynne's book.
Okay.
But when I started to write The Kiss Curse, I actually had her paired with somebody else.
Ooh.
For a solid like 30,000 words of
wow.
And then I realized it was not working at all. And I've now like spoken to like romance novelist friends and realized uh-huh. that this is actually a common thing. They're huh. like, it doesn't usually happen on your second book, but like, hey, where you're just like, I'm writing the wrong couple.
Mm.
And so I emailed my editor and I was like, I'm so sorry. I am an idiot and I'm writing the wrong romance. And Gwynne and this other person, like, it was not working like
yeah.
at all. Like, I don't know if they were too similar. I don't know. But it's, you know, and I'm not like super precious about writing. I'm never one of those people that's like, oh, my characters talk to me and they.
Right.
No, they do things that I didn't tell them to do. Like, no, I'm driving this boat.
Right.
But it does show that, like, if you've done, I think, like, the character work you're supposed to do, that,
yeah.
like, feel very specific.
Mm.
And so, like, yeah, it's like sometimes you're just like, well, this is not, like, these two people are genuinely, like, they're not interesting to each other, really.
Mm.
And not doing that romance thing where it's like, you know, they each have to need each other. There
yes.
needs to something that like one has that the other doesn't and vice mm-hmm. versa. So that there's this feeling of like, you know, completion there. And it just, mm-hmm. it wasn't happening. So yes.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like as soon as I was like, oh wait, it's Wells. Like what happens if I put Wells with Gwynne? Now the book really took off. I was like, oh, okay. These two people. Yes. Now I understand why it wasn't working before.
That's fascinating. That's so
yeah,
interesting.
It's really weird. It's very strange too now because like occasionally I'll find like little snippets of the original half of a first draft. Mm. And whenever like I see those, it's like that like Demi Lovato meme, you know, she's like yelling at someone like, get away from her, get a job.
Right.
That's how I feel. Like seeing this other love interest who gets his own book as well. Don't worry.
Okay. All right. All right.
And I'm writing his book right now and he's
Ooh.
Great, the person he's with. But it was like, it's such a, like, I have such a like, oh God, no, it's wrong. It's bad.
Yeah. Now I can tell we're all just going to be like reading The Kiss Curse, like trying to figure out like, who is it? Who is the
who
wrong
is it? Who could it possibly be?
Who could it possibly be? Don't tell. I would rather like try to guess.
No. So. And like, I think like once The Kiss Curse is like really has like been out there for a while, I'll probably do like an Instagram live and break the whole thing.
There you go.
Something.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we get to wildly speculate, which is always a good time on
yeah,
the internet.
Exactly.
Well, you've answered some of my questions, actually. Let me see. What do I want to ask you about? Oh, right. So I mean, you're on your second book for grown-ups purport. I mean, lots of grown-ups read YA, let's be real.
Right.
But about grown-ups. Let's say it's your second book about grown-ups.
There we go. About grown-ups doing romance.
yes. Do you feel like, you know, is it wildly different or does it feel very similar to the process of writing your YA novels?
You know, it's been really interesting moving out of that genre, and especially because like now, like I just write for adults. You know, I think a lot of people kind of do both, and I was sort of like, well, I'm closing the door on YA for now, and now I'm doing this. And I think a lot of that just was because the voice for YA was not coming as naturally to me anymore. Or I just sort of felt like, I've joked that like, I think once my own child became a teenager, I was suddenly like, hey, that's enough teenagers. Like, I don't want to spend time with fictional ones anymore. He's great. I love him. But, you know, that's enough teenageriness.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's like, you know, the process of writing the books is still the same. You know, like the actual process itself looks identical, basically. Mm. But, yeah, it's definitely different just in the sense of, like, the kinds of stories that I want to tell. And I mean, and still, like, in a lot of ways, I think, especially with the Kiss Curse and the X-Hex, they almost feel like the characters that I was writing for YA, but now they're grown up. You know what I mean? Like, especially because I was writing YA 10, 12 years ago. And so I'm kind of like, oh, these are just my teenage characters, but now they're 30.
You know? Oh, my gosh.
And so that's been kind of a funny feeling. And it's been interesting, too, because, you know, my readership has done the same. Like,
sure.
The people reading the X-Hex and the Kiss Curse, a lot of them were people that read Hex Hall 12 years ago, you know, but again, now they're in their mid-20s and they're like, oh, you're still here for me. Thanks. I appreciate it. So yeah, it's been kind of a trip.
That's so interesting. Would you ever consider doing that actual thing, like finding a character from your YA and writing the grown-up version? I don't know that I've ever seen anybody do that.
I don't know if I have either. I had really, really thought about doing like a Hex Hall now that, because again, like it would sort of be like in real time.
Yeah.
If she's 16 in 2010, then she's, you know, 28 or whatever now. And I've definitely I've dropped a couple of little Easter eggs in the X-Hex series about like Hex Hall. Like, just I like the idea that they exist in the same universe.
Yes.
You know, so like if you're doing witches, like you've got to sort of, and you did a witch years ago, you sort of have to nod to it a little bit. So yeah, I would love to. Like, I don't even know like what the legality of that would be.
Would
my former publishers be like, wait, what are you doing?
That's true. It's tricky rights wise, certainly.
Exactly. But I think it would be super fun. I think someone should do it. If not me, then someone should.
Yeah, someone should do that. I honestly, now that we're talking about it, I can't believe it hasn't happened. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I guess like Meg Cabot to some degree.
Oh, that's true.
The Princess Diaries, like she did like the wedding book.
Right. That's true.
So yeah, she's done it. Of course.
Well, and there are, that's true. And there are books that, you know, long running series that have, you know, characters who are now older show up, but they're not the main character. There's a new teenager in town, as it were.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So yeah, that's interesting. Well, you know, that does bring me to the other question I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, I will read pretty much anything witchy I can get my hands on. So I'm delighted that there is just like a plethora of witchy romance in particular out now. Like I can think like there's Lana Harper and Anna Guir and you and like so many great writers doing witches. Do you ever worry about like trying, how do you make it your own?
You know, it's so interesting because like there was like an explosion of witchy romances last year.
Yeah.
And what I love about that is I too want to read as many witchy romances as I can. And but also it's not like any of us were chasing a trend or any of us knew what the other one was doing and we're like, oh, I want to do that. It was literally like all at the same time, you know, independent. There was this kind of like, you know, universal thing where we were all like, let's write witchy romance.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool because I don't know. I always love to see when things like that happen, like organically like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting too, because like when I do read, I love Lana Harper stuff so much.
Yes.
I loved the Witch Please, the Anna Guir. Gwenda Bond also has Not Your Average Hot Guy, which is like demon, not witch, but she's got. Yeah. And she's got another one coming out called Mr. and Mrs. Witch, which is like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but they're witches, which is super duper fun. So I think like everybody is doing their own thing so well.
Yeah.
Like they, all the books. Oh, there's also, there's Not the Witch You Wed. And then there's also, I mean, there's so many. I'm like, they're all like exploding in my head.
Yeah.
But it's like, you don't even have to like worry that much weirdly about sort of, oh, is this, does this feel unique to me? Is this, you know, because it's like everybody was so independently doing their own thing.
Mm.
And it's like they all ended up feeling, you know, like their own thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I really appreciated and thought was just neat, you know, so that there's a little bit of something for every reader.
Yes.
Which I really, really like. So, yeah. So I was kind of chasing my own witchy bliss with mine. And I think they were all doing the same. And so we all kind of made these very like unique books.
Yeah. 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 There's, I mean, it definitely, it's so clear when you start to read them that they each have a very distinct flavor under the witchy, you know, slightly cozy romance umbrella.
Right.
And that is just so, it's so cool. I hope it continues, honestly, because I'll read them all.
I'm telling you, I'm like, give me all the paranormal rom-coms. There's there's one coming out next year called My Roommate's a Vampire or something like that with Sarah Levine. And I'm like, yes, all the paranormal rom-coms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's like, you know, I sat down to write this because I saw someone like mention, I think on Instagram, like, wouldn't a paranormal rom-com be cool? I was like, you know what? Maybe I can do that.
Challenge accepted.
Exactly.
That's fantastic. All right. Let's talk before we get like too far afield, because I feel like we could just do a whole episode that's just about paranormal rom-com, which like maybe we should do that. I'll have to think about
I'll talk
to your publicist or something. But you have one more book to recommend to our listeners. It's The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy by Megan Bannon. Tell us about this one.
Yes. So speaking of paranormal rom-coms, this is another one, and it is a really unique take. I remember like when Megan was talking about it on Twitter. And just, you know, for disclosure, Megan and I have the same agent.
Okay.
And she mentioned that our mutual agent had been, when she sort of was pitching this idea, our agent was like, that sounds super weird. So for sure do that. She's very much our agent. And she embraces all of our weird.
Nice.
And so, of course, I was like, well, I've got to read that then. And it is a Western based, it feels Western-y, but it's a fantasy world. So there are zombies, which they call drudges in this world. There's necromancy. There's all kinds of stuff like that. And then in the middle of it, you've got these two characters, Heart and Mercy, who do not like each other at all, except that they've got the whole you've got mail-esque thing where they're secretly pen pals and they don't know it, that's you know who they're writing to. And it's just a really, again, it's super creative. It is, I promise you, it is like nothing that you have ever read. The world building is so fascinating and just, and it also sort of has that cozy feel, even again, if there are like zombies and scary things.
Sure.
And the romance is just really sweet. These are two like really lonely people in this world who sort of don't realize like they've already sort of found what they're looking for in each other, which I always am a sucker for. So yeah, it's just, again, it's fun, it's whimsical, and I promise you, like, there is truly nothing else like it on the shelves, which is always like something that makes me really excited as a reader.
Yeah, 100%. And I do love a weird Western. That's
oh man, come on. Yeah, like there's something so fun about that.
Yes, yes. Ah, fantastic. Well, I mean, you have sold me on these books, which
yay,
you
know, good.
My perpetual problem recording this podcast is that now I need to read everything that everybody told me about.
I can't even imagine. Like, I asked for book recs on Twitter the other day and I got so many, like my Kindle is now like groaning.
Yes. Yes. The TBR does explode sometimes, but it's a good problem to have. So
indeed,
we'll take it. Thank you again so much for joining us and for talking about these books. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And so where should people find you on the internet?
So I do have a website, RachelHawkinsBooks.com and AaronSterlingBooks.com. they will sort of lean to each other. You can, you know, you can find Aaron Sterling on Rachel Hawkins. You can find Rachel Hawkins on Aaron Sterling. And then I am at Lady Hawkins on both Twitter and Instagram.
Great. So, great.
Yeah.
Yes. And so the book is The Kiss Curse. It'll be out by the time this airs. It is a sequel to The X-Hex. Go forth and enjoy. And yeah, thank you all for listening so much. As always, we super appreciate it. And we'd love to see your feedback. So please send us that at getbookedatbookriot.com. If you need your TBR exploded, you can get more book recommendations at bookriot.com. You can find our other podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. And as always, you can leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, really wherever. We super appreciate it. It helps other people find this show. And you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr as Jen IRL, J-E-N-N-I-R-L, or on Instagram as I am Jen IRL. And we will talk to you next time.